Get a concise daily market update from Charles Schwab, including the latest on U.S. and global economic news, stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update, an original podcast from Charles Schwab, provides an information-packed daily market recap in 10 minutes or less. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Paul Sweeney, along with Tom Keene. Join us each day for insight from the best in economics, geopolitics, finance, and investment. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And as always, on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
A huge issue for market investors is, what is this Federal Reserve going to do? I mean, we started the year thinking 6 rate cuts. If you look at WIRP Go, that's kind of what the market was discounting. Now we're kind of like 3 or 4. I don't know. But our next guest, he has an informed opinion. Rich Clarida, former vice chair at the Federal Reserve. Now he's got a paying job. He's a managing director in the New York office and PIMCO's global economic advisor. Rich, thanks so much for joining us here in studio
hey,
here.
Hey, Rich. Good to see you.
Yeah.
What is your Federal Reserve going to do, and when are they going to do it?
I've been doing other things for 2 years, so it's not my Fed anymore. I think they think they're done. I think they think the next move is a cut. And certainly in the recent press conference, the chair did not really try to push away the idea that they would start this summer. And so I think WIRP is more or less where I would be right now as well, 3 cuts. But I do think and hope that they are data dependent because the inflation data has been mixed at best. So I think it makes sense to start cutting now, but the pace and destination, I think, should depend on the inflation data, I hope.
I've been talking about this all morning, Rich. Great to see you, by the way.
Yeah.
In terms of the Baltimore Bridge collapse. And I understand overall you can just go to a different port eventually. But in the short term, there could be an impact on disinflation for autos. And I'm wondering if we see disinflation stop for durable goods and good stuff, does that change the data and does it change or push back a cut?
Great question. I think on that, the crisp answer would be no, for the simple reason that it's potentially a big shock to auto prices, although I think other folks think it could be attenuated. But I think the Fed would tend to, and that would be a good approach to look through that. So it shouldn't change the Fed's 1 or 3 year inflation picture materially about this tragedy in Baltimore, and I think they would look through that. If that's the only thing going on. The tricky thing, of course, is that goods disinflation is a big part of getting down to 2% eventually. It's been happening in the last couple of years, but they need to be looking at that more closely because there are other factors pushing up goods prices, including supply chains and all reshoring and onshoring and all that. So right now they'll be getting a lot of help with goods disinflation, but they'll need to keep on top of that.
Rich, a lot of folks we talk to, whether they're academics or practitioners, they say inflation's already whipped. If you look at the real-time data, it's done. We're done. Why isn't the Federal Reserve not moving now? And perhaps it's because the Federal Reserve looks at data that's in the rearview mirror. How do you think about that argument? How do you kind of come back to that?
Well, I think that if the Fed were targeting the CPI inflation index, which is probably more well understood than the PCE, The CPI is running a point hotter now. It's somewhere in the high threes, maybe low four. So we really wouldn't be talking about Fed rates cut if the Fed were targeting a different index. Also, I think the Fed will tend to look at the drivers of inflation, if you will, the trend in inflation. And a big part of that is labor cost. And wages, wage inflation has come down, but it's still a little bit hot. So certainly if I were still at the Fed, which I'm not, you know, I wouldn't be in the mission accomplished camp. I would be encouraged by the data we got in the second half of last year. And it's been very, very great, as Governor Waller was saying 2 years ago, that we've been able to disinflate without really any pain in the labor market. So, you know, knock on wood, that continues. But I don't think if you look at broader measures of inflation that we're there yet.
Why did the Fed miss the boat on inflation a few years ago? And will they miss the boat now?
Well, I was there, of course, then in 01 and charter member of Team Transitory.
So you were Team Transitory.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone hated that was the word. But yet that was true.
Well, it was in the FOMC statement, which I signed off on. So I guess I didn't hate it at the time. Look, initially in the spring and summer of 2021, headline inflation was high, but it was not really broad-based. In fact, I remember at one point saying to one of my colleagues, you know, I'm not prepared to raise rates because used car prices are up 40%. But by the second half of 2021, it didn't matter. Every inflation index was going up and was very broad-based. And so I think the transitory story had a confrontation with reality, and the Powell Fed pretty quickly, beginning in the fall of 2021, began to pivot to tighter policy. So Team Transitory was really in play, you know, for maybe 6 or 9 months, but the Fed moved pretty quickly once the data changed.
And do you feel like the economy is in such a position now that, again, we had some inflation data over the last month or so that kind of suggested to some people that maybe inflation's not beaten down here. So does it suggest that the Fed can in fact wait here and just kind of let the long and variable lags play out?
I think that is certainly an option. And I think that is a message the chair was conveying at the press conference at the last meeting. They think they're policy is restrictive. So one option, if you think policy is restrictive, is just to delay the cuts. And the longer you keep policy restrictive, the more the lags will tend to kick in. But they're also very cognizant of the fact that they're getting some good news on the supply side. Labor force participation's up, productivity growth is up, and appropriately, they don't want to lean against that. So if more people are working and they're more productive, you don't want to try to lean against that.
Rich, what would be a word that you would use to describe inflation now? Like if it was, because, you know, to some extent, transitory wasn't wrong. Like for goods prices, it was transitory. Yeah. Just the time frame of transitory was challenging.
Yeah.
What's the word you would use?
I don't know if I have a word. I'd say we're on the right path, but there is a risk that the progress could stall. Maybe on the next time I come, I can condense that to one word.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to think about that too. Risky, nerve-wracking.
Sticky and stubborn is a possibility.
All right, Rich, you got some advanced degrees at some place in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is you're University of Illinois Illini.
And proud
Sweet
of it.
16.
And proud of it.
How do you feel about your Sweet 16 Illini?
Well,
here?
You know, I looked it up. It's been a long time since my Illini made the Sweet 16. In fact, it was 20 years ago, which in itself is pretty sad. You got to root for them. I think when they did make it to the Final Four, they played a North Carolina team that was better. So, yeah, hope springs eternal. I graduated in 1979, so it's been a long time since the Illini have been the center of attention in basketball.
But you'll be rooting them on against, I guess, Iowa State this time, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right, good stuff. All right, Richard Clarida, thank you so much for joining us. Richard Clarida, former vice chair of the Federal Reserve.
Get a concise daily market update from Charles Schwab, including the latest on U.S. and global economic news, stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update is an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Join host Keith Lansford for this information-packed daily market recap, delivered in 10 minutes or less. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcasts. That's schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Let's go to Margi Patel. She is the Senior Portfolio Manager, Allspring Global Investments. Margi, thanks so much for joining us here. You know, I've got a market that on the S&P 500 is up, you know, kind of 10% this year. We had this big, big move off of the October lows of last year. What do I do here? Do I jump into this market? Do I just stick with my two-year treasury at 4.6%? What do I do here?
Well, I think the main thing is to say the economy's in great shape, and it looks as if it's actually on the verge of slightly reaccelerating. A number of other countries in the world also look as if they're modestly accelerating. So that says you have to really stick with equities and, you know, look for the best sectors and the best companies and not be scared off by another recession scare.
So if, though, the scenario that you just set up, Margi, means that the Fed maybe won't cut, does that then weirdly disrupt the bullish scenario you just laid out?
Well, I think when you looked at the economy, you've looked at corporate profits now for over 2 years, and there are very few companies that have actually been sensitive to the changes in the Federal Reserve. Profit margins weren't squeezed when the Fed raised short rates by 5 percentage points. And I think if they cut by a quarter or don't cut by a quarter or half, whatever, I think I won't say the economy is impervious to it, but I think the whole economy is much less sensitive to changes on the part of Federal Reserve policy. I think that's why the Fed's a little flummoxed, because their actions don't really seem to have the effects in the real economy that they thought they would see.
All right, so given that backdrop, Margi, are there certain sectors that you think are attractive here? I mean, of course, you know, Alex Steele's been long the Magnificent Seven all along, so she's just clipping coupons here. But how about the rest of us who maybe are still looking for some opportunities?
Well, I think if you look at what companies have sustainable growth, and that still is technology, that still is some of the very largest tech firms, I think they still have their momentum in place and they'll continue to be winners. I think that we see a number of companies in the industrial space that are benefiting from higher capital expenditures, from reshoring. What just happened in Baltimore is, I think, one more straw on the camel's back that says companies may be rethinking having overseas operations and bringing more production home. And we also have a lot of capital expenditures for the whole economy to improve the power grid, to improve infrastructure. And I think those two will also help to keep the economy going in the industrial space. We think in healthcare it's mixed, but we think some companies have gotten through COVID, aren't too dependent on China for sales, and they should also do well if they can continue to think up new products that will benefit the healthcare system.
I love that you brought up the industrial story and all the public money kind of flowing in. The getting private capital in has been increasingly difficult, and sort of squaring that gap, I don't know, sure. filling that hole can be very tricky. Plus, companies that seem to have order books, they're not booking the revenue. Like, it's not as fast as we think it is. How do you play something like that? You're in like a structural shift, but still in a cyclical sector.
Yes, well, that's right. Because I think companies aren't just madly spending money on hope they'll get a return. I think they're being very prudent in where they make capital expenditures. And it's not the whole economy. It's particularly those sectors that we all were able to get a good return. Again, such as technology, certain parts of the power market, looks as if suddenly people realize that the whole economy is rather short on power to run the economy. And and also in the energy space, I think we've seen them be pretty disciplined on capital expenditures, but I think we'll continue to see energy capex. And so for those sectors that need CapEx that can justify good return, I think we'll continue to see capital expenditures.
And Paul, to this point, do you know what the third best performing stock in the S&P is this quarter?
No.
Constellation Energy. Oh, it is a power beautiful. Company behind Supermicro and NVIDIA.
I like that.
Up 58%.
You are all over this theme, that is for sure. Hey, Margaret, we've had the stock market rally 25% off of those late October lows here. Do I have to start calling into question valuation in this market?
Well, you know, it's hard to say how do you value something. Typically, people look at, say, the price-earnings ratio compared to, say, the 10-year treasuries or something like that for whether something's overvalued or undervalued. But I think two things. I think that there's really no connection of the stock price and its price-earnings ratio. It really comes down to investor expectations of future earnings. And secondly, if you look at, say, the average price-earnings ratio or dividend yield to treasuries, I think you may be taken a little off course because I think that with so much treasury supply, we're likely to see treasury yields be somewhat higher than we might have thought for where inflation is, where the growth of the economy is. So that's why I think it's better to just look for companies that have sustainable earnings and say, let the market figure out if it should be a PE of 25 or 30 or 35 and just buy where we see sustainable growth.
Margie, before I let you go, we need to channel Tom Keen because he probably would have led with this anyway. Dollar yen, 151 spot 09. What is the trade here?
Well, we all have our biases. I think U.S. is best. I continue to see U.S.-based companies that have tremendous growth opportunities that really are greater than what I see in other parts of the world. So I really couldn't comment on Japan. I'm glad to see they're creeping into positive interest rate territory. I think it's a great country, a very terrific economy, but I think U.S. has just as many opportunities, so I'll stick with the U.S.
All right, Margie, thank you so much for joining us. As always, Margie Patel, Senior Portfolio Manager, Allspring Global Investments. Appreciate that. Joining us here in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio is Marvin Lowe. He's a Senior Strategist, Global Macro for this little shop up in Baltimore known as State Street, which was a go-to meeting for me when I was a sell-side analyst. Had to go to the good folks, Larry Haverty at State Street and all the good folks there. Marvin, I guess the Federal Reserve over the last week or so and other central banks have kind of said, yeah, we're mindful of inflation out there, but we still think we can cut rates. Is that kind of your view here as we look forward?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the signaling couldn't have been stronger. Everyone's lining up to begin in June, and you know that's a fairly aggressive, dovish impulse for the market to absorb.
So I mentioned this in the last hour, but Bloomberg Economics talked about the bridge and the Fed and inflation. And their hypothesis is that not that necessarily if the bridge is closed for a while, it will affect inflation, but that in terms of auto disinflation, that will slow, and that that could actually push back the timing of a Fed cut. I guess the question is, do you agree, and does it matter?
You know what, it ultimately doesn't matter because it will be temporary, but it does make data at a very important part of the process a little bit harder to analyze. Goods disinflation has been so important for this inflation story over, you know, let's say the last 4 months, where the end of last year it drove a lot of the optimism, and then all of a sudden when we got less goods disinflation in January and February, all of a sudden everyone's worried about inflation again. So, you know, we've got access to some online indicators around inflation, and they're showing a little bit more of a little bit more perkiness as we go even into March, into the beginning of April.
So, given that background, again, inflation's still there, although it's come down significantly from its peaks. We all know that. What are we doing in the fixed income space here? I mean, I don't know. I can just go buy a two-year treasury at 4.6% and go kick back and maybe go skiing here, get some spring skiing in here. What do I do here in the fixed income space?
Yeah, for sure. I continue to like the shorter end of the curve exactly based on the reason that that you mentioned. You could lock in those yields if that's within your time horizon. We want to go skiing for a lot more than 2 years, though, so we got to figure out what to do a little bit further out the curve. You know, kind of locking in some of the yields, particularly in the corporate space, has been a very attractive trade. Spreads are tight, you know, that makes a challenge. But if you're just clipping those coupons, you know, you could lock in those yields for a 5 to 7 year period. And let's hope we're still skiing after that too.
So that's a yield play, not a price appreciation play or anything like that.
It is. It definitely is more of a total return type of environment. If you're a fund manager and you're managing to benchmarks and you're trying to look for spread compression, that becomes a bit harder.
So for me, I think we've talked about this, that I had money sitting in a money market fund. I'm the kind of gal that'll have...
mattress.
I'm the kind of gal that would have like gold and soup cans under her bed. Just suffice it to say, I'm very risk averse.
Right.
And I'm wondering like what I do with that money market fund and that money under the bed. Like, do I just keep it there? Does that belong to somewhere else? And I sort of feel like we don't know yet. We thought it was a stock thing. Maybe not.
You know, it depends on how much money you've got under the mattress. For sure, it shouldn't all be there.
All of it.
You know,
I
still like the short end of the curve. You know, I haven't extended that much because higher for longer means that we're probably going to be able to collect, you know, a decent money market rate, you know, potentially into the end of this year, which is what a lot of experts did not expect.
Yeah.
Kind of having said that, you know, you do have to get into some of the riskier parts of the curve. Things are expensive, but, you know, I still think that there's tailwind for those risk assets.
You know, we look at the fixed income space in 2023, that kind of surprised me that the best performing fixed income market was a high yield. Double digit gains in the high yield market last year. And with all the talk of recession, I was surprised that high yield did so well. What do you think about taking some of that type of credit risk these days?
You know what? High yield is expensive, for sure. Okay. It is a credit market. So, you know, if you're comfortable picking those credits within the BB space, you know, the default rates around that type of environment are not overly penal, but you have to pick those credits. Overall, if you're kind of buying the broader index, you know, be aware that there still is risk that lurks with this inverted yield curve and a higher for longer kind of Fed as we go into next year.
Okay, so if I take some of that money out of the money market fund and I don't want to put it in the 2 year, but I want to put it in the equity market, am I putting it in NVIDIA or am I putting it in energy or am I putting it in utilities?
When do you need it? That's the first question. I do like...
I don't know, 40, 50 years when I retire?
There you go.
60 years.
Then you're continuing to buy the U.S. Equity markets. And I've always liked growth. I've always felt that U.S. investors, the demand for growth globally is something that puts U.S. investors in a good position.
All right, Marvin, thank you so much for joining us. Marvin Lowe, he's a senior strategist, global macro for State Street.
Get a concise daily market update from Charles Schwab, including the latest on U.S. and global economic news, stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update is an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Join host Keith Lansford for this information-packed daily market recap, delivered in 10 minutes or less. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcast. That's schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
All right, your daily look at the front pages around the world. Lisa Mateo, the newspapers. What do you have for us today?
Well, we've been talking about the collision at the Baltimore Bridge. So I want to start here because apparently there's been some troubled history with that particular ship. So this is according to Vessel Finder. It was built in 2015, right? But it hit a stone wall berth at the port of Antwerp in Belgium in 2016. So it suffered some damage there, but it still remained afloat. It was repaired. The Washington Post says that ship, it was sold to Singapore-based Grace Ocean after the accident. But there's been different questions about mechanical, you know, questions concerning it. Last June, it did a safety inspection and found issues that were related to some of the gauges that were linked to the ship's propulsion, which we know that was a factor in the crash as well. But it's still not clear what exactly those issues were. But it's still, you know, because we're having all these questions about what actually caused, you know, the collision at the bridge. So these are just some things that came up as far as the history of the ship. So some questions behind it.
Yeah, I wonder if some, you know, I'm not a big seafarer person here, but I wonder if people are saying, like, are certain ships kind of cursed? I don't know if that's a thing, and if you're a mariner here. But
You're superstitious, or, you know, Irish, maybe.
Exactly.
So there's that. But I also feel like not only maybe there's certain ships, but I think you could pick apart anything. Like, you could go to any ship and you could find some stuff that could be improved, right?
Right.
You could also ask the question, why did the bridge crumble so fast? Like, I read a report that maybe the supports needed to be updated. They weren't as thick as they could be. So I think it's going to be one of those things.
And I did hear on a radio yesterday, a report, the gentleman who designed the bridge saying the ship actually hit at the weakest point.
Right.
So there's, but that it did come down very, very quickly. So again, Katie Lyons for Bloomberg Television. She is in Baltimore. We'll have continued coverage from Kaylee throughout the morning.
All right. So the next one we have from the Wall Street Journal. NBC Universal's Peacock streaming service is going to be the exclusive platform for the NFL's opening week. It's a Friday game in Brazil featuring the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, this is the first game in South America, but the NFL also said that Amazon's Prime Video streaming service, they landed the rights for an exclusive streaming playoff game during the upcoming 2024-25 season. But the league is also scheduling a game on Christmas Day. So all this together, it brings up two things.
It shows, at least.
So it shows that the league leaning towards streaming to get that younger audience. So that's one route. And then the other route is that you have the Brazil game on Friday. You have the Christmas Day, which is actually on a Wednesday. Yeah. So is the NFL moving away from the traditional Sunday game, which, you know, everybody's always, you know, used to, you know, Sunday night football.
Alex is not
buying
this.
Guys, is this really the NBC story of the morning? Or is it Ronan McDaniel?
Oh, that's right. So is she out now?
She's out. That was a fast hire.
She's out.
Yeah.
That was a fast 4-day thing. I mean, that's great. Sports, they stream, they do stuff. Whatever, but Ronan McDaniel.
I know.
I also appreciate it, and I hope everyone's listening. Rich, this is for you. Is the New York Times led with, it shows the power of talent.
Yes. The talent spoke out about it.
We like this idea.
Yeah, the talent came out against her pretty aggressively.
And then the rhetoric, at least the Times, was like, hey, it just shows the power of the talent if you choose to see it. So, you know, we choose to see it.
Yes. Adventure travel.
I did like that. Oh, yes, adventure travel. Okay, so that's the next
Paul's
one.
Paul's not into this. Nah,
definitely not. I know you like to sit on the beach with the cocktail.
Yep.
Adventure travel, not just for the young. Apparently a lot more older folks. The ages have risen over the past few years. They're going on bike tours. We're talking about 5,600 miles, okay, on a bike tour. We're talking hiking the Appalachian Trail, surfing. Oh, you might like that one, Paul.
Maybe.
See? But the reason for this is because they're saying there's better gear, there's more accommodations, right? The 55 plus crowd, they've traveled more than their parents and grandparents have. So they've done the Rome, Paris. Now they want to go more extreme, you know, and they have the time and the money. So those are the two things.
We're doing what our new plan is in like September of every year. We're going to do an international trip. So the first one is this September, we're going to Ireland, but it's a tour and we're kind of doing the thing.
No biking, kind of hiking,
no hiking thing. I mean, you know, hiking to the pub in each town we go to is probably it. My son is on a surfing trip up and down the California coast for his spring break with the outdoors club at his university. So he's surfing all the big breaks in California, and hopefully he'll survive. But yeah, I'm not adventure travel, please.
You're not, no.
And, you know, here's my adventure travel.
In my 20s.
On the New York City subway. Twice a day. That's my adventure travel.
Actually, that's not at all inaccurate.
That's exactly right. So, I mean, you know, you're right. People are living longer.
Yes.
And we kind of thought, let's travel now while we can.
Well, yes. You did the ski trip. That was a little dangerous.
Yeah, but that's everything. I've been doing skiing since ever. But we decided, we're going to, each September, we're going to do something.
But we're not going to be like,
but
rough
it's not
in
adventure.
It's just a not sitting on the beach thing. It's just something different.
Right. But there better be a Four Seasons involved somewhere along the line.
It's so true. I think my next big trip will be a safari, but.
That
would be nice.
But that's just with my kid because she loves animals so much. But I think she's to be a little bit older. But I think that will be what we're working for.
Right. I love that.
What else you got? I'm not sure I like this story.
Yeah, this is a little kicker here.
And I say, where did Lisa get the story? The
New York Post.
I love this story.
Mike Tyson, we all know he's been selling edibles, right? But this one is going to be shaped like a chewed ear. So it's a callback, to Iron Mike's Heavyweight Showdown with Evander Holyfield. You can get them in New York, apparently. They're selling at certain places. They've already had Strain Stars over in Farmingdale, Housing Works in Greenwich Village, Grow Together in Brooklyn. Those are some of the places that already have them, but they're selling like hotcakes. People are ready for it. They're hyped up. He has that comeback fight against Jake Paul in July. So
why do we not like this? This is brilliant marketing.
It's brilliant marketing.
You got to respect the marketing, even if you're not going to go eat an ear. They don't look that bad. I mean, they look like one of those I'm making like a circular thing where it's like a rope. It's like a gummy rope or something.
A gummy rope. Okay, like a lasso.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, but no, it's a great marketing pro.
Yeah. I'm into it.
Mike Tyson stays on the front pages all the time.
You got to respect that.
He's always kind of in play there, either in movies or doing all kinds of crazy
things. Wait until that Jake Paul fight. He'll be back.
Well, when is that again?
July.
July.
And who is Jake Paul?
Big YouTuber. Big YouTuber.
But he's young, right?
But he's young. He's like almost half his age, I would think.
And this is streaming on Netflix? Am I totally making that up?
No, I think you're right. I think you're right.
And this goes back to sports streaming.
Yes, because of Netflix sports streaming. Yes.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, so we'll have to see. All right, so and it kind of goes back to your first story about, NBC Universal Peacock streaming the NFL. Everything's going streaming, kids, so you better get ready for that. All right, that was Lisa Mateo with the newspaper wrap-up.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast, bringing you the best in economics, geopolitics, finance, and investment. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And as always, on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.